On Robinhood Radio, it's time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.com and has reported since 2012 for the PBS network, mainly on ethical issues. He is also the author of a memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning January 24th, 2025. The eyes of the world, not only this country, were of course turned toward Washington this week as a new, actually all too familiar, American president officially squeezed his ample hindquarters into the seat of power. I would say global media's reactions to the new regime are worth tracking at this point as we hit day five of the 1400 still to come in the second Trump era. International perspectives might somewhat counterbalance the American media in all their overheated introversion. Let's turn to the Times of London. Once, it may be hard to believe, it was known as the Thunderer, supposedly listened to by everyone, and without doubt, still today, it's a voice for conservatism in Britain and the whole world over. For it, there were in Trump's return certain matters on the cultural conservative agenda that should be welcomed. I'll quote, "The president made the sensible pledge to rescind federal government mandates for the diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda, while male and female would be the two recognized genders." At the same time, the bold Thunderer could not hide its uneasiness about what it called, quote, "an unshackled America First agenda," and on future prospects in general, it summed up its editorial position this way. Mr. Trump said he wants America to, quote, "flourish and be respected." Now he must prove he has the discipline to fulfill his high rhetoric. To Russia next, where Komsomolskaya Pravda is the one-time Young Communist League's newspaper that still lives on as a tabloid unswervingly loyal to today's Kremlin. It reported as obsequiously as ever Vladimir Putin's statement that Moscow welcomes the incoming administration, especially for its, quote, "desire to restore direct contacts with Russia, which were halted through no fault of ours by the outgoing administration." No fault of ours, says the man who invaded his neighbor 3 years ago, beginning the war of attrition that still continues. Putin's air of injured innocence is intended, of course, to achieve an echo in the Trump White House. In fact, we can be sure it will. The inaugural address, after all, was full of a lot of emphatically stated intentions, but not a word, tellingly, about Ukraine. That's despite his campaigning promise to end the war in 24 hours. We had to wait 72 hours, and then all we got was rhetoric on social media threatening Putin with, guess what, Trump's all-purpose weapon of choice, trade tariffs. Across Europe as a whole, there's a wariness in many media about Trump 2.0, a wariness that borders on paranoia. Germany has its own snap general election due in just 4 weeks from now, but very typical is one randomly chosen voter, an engineering teacher in the nation's northeast region, who told the BBC, "It's insane. Our country feels broken. Our economy is stagnant. But most of the news just seems obsessed with Trump, Trump, Trump." That might feel very familiar. The Europe editor at the BBC, Katja Alder, said pithily that Trump still simply bewilders European politicians and commentators, especially in the way he's chosen to publicly lambast allies in Europe instead of taking an assertive stand toward a country that he has recognized as a very sizable strategic threat, China. He threatens trade tariffs, of course, everybody knows that, even promising us his new so-called external revenue service to impose them, and supposedly to swell our own coffers, improbably. But the tariffs are so far loosely aimed in many different scattershot directions, hardly as tactical and surgical an approach as Europeans would prefer. The fact is about China, as analysts across the globe repeatedly assert, the biggest country in the world is entering this year of the serpent, which can't help sounding unpropitious, at least to Western ears, with a more fragile and much less attractive economy for global business. Long before Trump returned to power, technological rivalry between the US and China had already turned hostile, and major corporate players like Apple, Microsoft, IBM, and Dell have been choosing to leave China, relocating to Vietnam, the Philippines, or Indonesia, all of them now higher growth rate countries than China. What's already becoming intriguing to the rest of the world is what Trump has not done about China. The global news service Reuters made a point of how Trump, quote, ran a campaign which was very aggressive towards China, and then on day one, shied away from it. The agency cited Alicia Garcia Herrero of Natixis, the Paris-based international bank, where she's chief economist for the Asia-Pacific region. Her observation? Trump wants a deal. Otherwise, he would have critiqued China right from the start of his term. We should also remember, I'd add, that the ever more influential acolyte to Trump, Elon Musk, has for years cultivated very close ties with the Chinese leadership. There could well be an intramural fight looming soon, pitting Musk against the now-confirmed Secretary of State, ex-Senator Marco Rubio, who's long been a vehement hawk on China. But we can't ever be sure when it comes to this new administration, and least of all when it comes to that sensitive Far East region. An economically weakened China might turn to more saber-rattling and not of the merely metaphorical kind. The military dimension to the region's antagonisms may well surge to the fore. Once again, keen-eyed French watchers have a view on this. France has long established an authoritative equivalent to the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times. The Les Echos paper expects that with Trump in the Oval Office, the so-called Quad, the four-sided military partnership between the US, India, Japan, and Australia, is bound to be strengthened considerably, ratcheting up the East Asia standoff and perhaps heightening the threat of conflict over Taiwan in particular. This would be greatly at odds with the much-touted de-risking approach that has been so much in vogue ever since the EU Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, formulated it nearly 2 years ago. The matter upon which international and domestic issues come together for Trump is, of course, immigration, and nowhere more heatedly than in his fanatical plans for mass deportations. Nearly half of the estimated 11 million undocumented people living in the U.S. are Mexican. In Reynosa, just inside Mexico, Pastor Hector Silva, a Protestant minister, has been telling local and visiting journalists, neither the shelters, nor the entire border area, nor Mexico as a whole are ready for this. The pastor runs a migrant shelter called Sendel de Vida, the Path of Life. Mexico's economy is bound to be badly affected, and there's still, in addition, the imminent threat of tariffs, what else, at 25% or more, being imposed on Mexican goods that are shipped to El Norte. The New York Times looked to another Latin American country, Guatemala, to gauge the likely impact of deportations there. And the plans by President Bernardo Arevalo for what he has called a dignified reception for those Guatemalan migrants who might be forcibly sent south. And of course, the conclusion journalists reached is that it won't be easy. It's a small, impoverished nation, horribly scarred by a pounding civil war that lasted an extraordinary 36 years. It has a population of just 17 million, and in theory, it can expect to have to deal with nearly 500,000 returnees. And meanwhile, in return, so to speak, Guatemala's own leading newspaper, Prensa Libre, reported on the United States, portraying, naturally enough, the anxious communities of its own countrymen and women living there, many legally, many not. Those interviewed by the paper were also pinning what hopes they held for not being deported on the fact that they have led blameless lives in the U.S., occasioning no interactions with authorities, except for lawfully paying their taxes every year. The paper was doubtful this would make any difference to their fate. Prensa Libre is also where I learned something very different, and rather unexpected. But it could be a reflection, ironical perhaps, on the transcontinental interdependence of the Americas, in which migration plays such a big and vital part. And it concerns the Trump family themselves. Unlike many American reporters this week, I've not been at all concerned with Melania Trump's dramatic Zorro-like hat, broad-brimmed to the point of repelling any possible cheek-kissing by her husband. No, the newspaper story that so captivated me concerned other heads. Let me quote Prensa Libre directly. Eric and Donald Jr., Trump, decided to prepare for their father's inauguration by having their hair done, together with their half-sister, Tiffany Trump. She hired the Guatemalan stylist, Axel Emilio Vasquez Constanza, to take charge of doing their hair in the best way possible. The Guatemalan, whose salon is in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, also styled the hair of the president's ex-wife, Marla Maples, Tiffany's mother. I feel I should point out, too, that in their social media postings, the style maestro Constanza's team labeled their assignment this way, glamming up the Trumps, they called it. I'll leave it at that. For my international press survey overall, I realize I've frequently chosen French sources to cite. Maybe it's because the French have been so, oh, what is that word, piquant in their eloquence. So I'll close with Le Monde's editorial from Paris about what it calls the avalanche of executive orders that have followed the inauguration. From Trump's sweeping pardons for the convicted insurrectionist invaders of the Capitol, through his plans to utterly politicize the federal civil service, to his aim of abolishing the Constitution's enshrined principle of citizenship as a birthright, and his abandoning of international agreements and institutions like the Paris Climate Treaty and the World Health Organization. All these unilateral moves, says Le Monde, have demonstrated the temptation for Trump of what it calls unfettered executive power. In short, with all these orders, Trump was, and I quote, striking his first blow against the very institution he had just sworn to preserve. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.com.